Ever feel like you got up on the wrong side of the bed? Life's too short. I don't waste a minute of it. Welcome to the Michael Chavez Podcast and discover what it's like on the other side of the bed. Here's your host.
Welcome to my show. This is Michael Chavez, and I believe our attitudes and belief systems can build or destroy our futures. After all the people I've heard talk about waking up on the wrong side of the bed, I wanted to share insights about the other side of the bed. Today, I'm talking with a guest you're going to love, J. Lauren Norris, keynote speaker, international leadership speaker, writer, author of 6 books, and certified John Maxwell Leadership, right?
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Michael.
It's great to have you here. It's great that we had, you know, I enjoyed that conversation we had the other day. A lot of interesting, we had a lot of good stories.
Yes, sir.
I'm not sure if my listeners are familiar with you. Can you share some more information about you, your background, where you're from?
Sure. Well, I grew up in Central Texas in a small town. And when I say small, I mean there were about 5,000. Probably 3,000 of those were cows. My graduating class was under 200 people. And so when I say grew up in rural America, baling hay was a summer job from the time I was 13 until I graduated from high school. Went off to the military right after that because I broke up with a girlfriend, and that kind of ended my mental world for a while. I was near suicidal over a woman for the first time in my life. After the Air Force, I came out, went into sales, and then that path through sales and marketing led me to the Dale Carnegie course in 2004. I coached that program for 5 years, and then when I left corporate America, I went into DJing because it was the best place to use good communication skills that I'd learned all my life. And that led me to motivational speaking. I joined the John Maxwell team in 2011, competed in the World Championship of Public Speaking with Toastmasters the same year. And that was when I started writing my first books. So here we are 10 years later.
Sounds like a full life.
I like to think I'm on my third life now. I've had the, yes. I've had the first two already. Only one wife, though. 28 years, only one wife. Third life, one wife.
You know, very few people can say that.
I don't call it pride, but it is in my family even, it's a sense of accomplishment.
It is a big accomplishment. Like I said, there's, you know, I just, you know, pay attention to the divorce rate. I'm divorced. I was married for 9 years and didn't go for the 10. And just looking at the divorce rate, it's like 50-51% in the United States, yeah. Which is ridiculous.
Well, all the credit has to go to my wife. She put up with a lot to hang on to me for this long. So,
and it's great to find a partner like that.
I call it a catitude. There was actually a day that I cussed her out and told her to get the F out of my truck.
Uh-huh.
I was screaming at the top of my lungs. All the kids were crying, and she looked at me and said, no. That was it. That was her response, and she's still around. That was 18 years ago.
Wow. Love that story. I was like, she's a good friend of mine already.
Yeah, you'd like her. She doesn't talk much.
Well, I'm an introvert by nature, so for me to have a podcast is just really outside of me. And so just being able to connect with people and, you know, share stories. And how many years did you serve in the Air Force?
Just five.
Just five?
I have 4 years and a handful of months for – I got an extension because I was on a TDY when I got my new orders. And they're like, well, you can – decline the orders and get out, or you can extend and take the orders. And I was like, England, sure, I'll go. And that was right at the beginning of Desert Seal, Desert Storm.
Okay. Let's see, I was in Long Beach, California when that happened. I served 20 years in the Navy, and I remember when I first joined, I was going to do 4 years and get out, and that was a decision I made before I even raised my hand. And, you know, before that 4 years is up, I was thinking, you know, I didn't learn a damn thing.
Yeah.
So I stayed around for another 4 years. I was going to do 8 years and get out. And I did the one thing that, you know, most people fail to do is make a plan and be prepared to get out. And I wasn't prepared. And so I re-enlisted again, and that 8 turned into 20.
Right.
And so one of the things that we're going to talk about is veterans and the things, the challenges that veterans deal with. And to me, that's been a big thought process and just listening that there's like 22 veterans a day that commit suicide. And I, you know, when I first heard that, I said, no, that's ridiculously high.
It is. Yeah.
And some of the things that, you know, I keep thinking about, it's like, you know, why is that? I'm not really, I'm kind of at a loss to even explain that.
Let me kind of share what my experience slash insight is to that. I think suicide usually follows a loss of hope. And a loss of hope often follows a loss of purpose. So when I feel like I'm here for something and I know that I haven't accomplished it yet, that drives me to continue to do something at least until I find that sense of accomplishment. It's the hope that motivates us. When I came out of the military, I was up for E5 and was on the list. And they're like, again, if you take the 5, then you got to take another 4 because you can't get the 5 and get out in 3 months. And I'm like, let me think about it. And so I went to see the education counselor. I had gotten a pretty nice signing, bonus toward my GI Bill when I got out. And she said, so what do you want to do? And I said, I think I want to go into public speaking. I want to write a book or a bunch of books, and I want to travel around the world and help families keep from falling apart. And she said, oh, that's fascinating. You're a firefighter. You've been trained to be a firefighter. That's a good paying job on the outside. Why don't you go be a firefighter on the outside? And I said, apparently you've never been a firefighter, because that's not a job. It's a mindset. It's a worldview. Everything you do is built around rescuing other people. And I'm okay with that, but that's not what I want to do the rest of my life. Besides which, I've already destroyed both knees and I have nerve damage in my hips because of the things that I did as a firefighter on active duty.
We're going to carry on with that story. That's a good story to start with when we come back from the break.
Excellent.
Everybody loves music, but not everybody knows what it can do for you. I'm sure you've noticed issues like anxiety, depression, and addiction are up. At Chester Squared Music Therapy Services, we understand. We have a seasoned staff with almost 30 years of experience dealing with clients with Alzheimer's, PTSD, addiction recovery, pervasive developmental disorders, post-accident rehab, and head trauma. We have experience in the local school district special ed departments, psychiatric hospitals, rehab facilities, medical and counseling centers. For those who are struggling to break free of the 9-to-5 rut, I've developed my groundbreaking Power of a Positive playlist system, taught in local psychiatric and rehab facilities successfully for years, and it's helped thousands of people. If, like many people, you struggle with boundaries, inner voices, relationships, impractical spirituality, anxiety, and panic attacks, improve your life through the power of music therapy. I'm a published author of 2 books and available to speak at conferences, seminars, and corporate events. Go to ivorchester.com today. That's ivorchester.com. Go now.
Local business, don't get run over like a freight train. What if there were television and podcast studios right in your own backyard? Call 214-714-0495. OBBM Network Studios at Grace Point Media are DFW's full-service media solution for busy business owners who want to support their local community. Want your own show? We'll put it together and promote it for you. Want to advertise to businesses? With over 20 platforms, OBBM Network gets you in front of DFW's business community in powerful and creative new ways. Associate in higher profile circles. Take advantage of guest spots on business TV or podcasts. Join us at 1860 Crown Road, Suite 1410 in Farmers Branch, Texas, for an episode, or maybe two. In fact, make OBBM the place you meet for valuable one-on-ones. Profitable business, free America. Make media work for you, DFW. Call 214-714-0495 and check out the calendar on offbeatbusiness.com for events you don't want to miss. What was that number? 214-714-0495.
So, welcome back from the break. So you're talking about being a firefighter in the Air Force and the injuries that you sustained. That's just, what really gets me is that, people are all stuck into putting people in the corner because of where their background is.
Right.
And to go from a firefighter to a public speaker, what really prompted you to, you said you want to keep families together. So what prompted that feeling?
Well, I want to spend a little more time on the story if I can.
Sure.
Because I think it's one of the challenges that veterans face today. Like you said, we tend to get put in a box, and that box often looks like your resume, your job application. What have you already done before? What that box often doesn't look like is, what's your potential? What are you capable of? What are you made for? What is your genuine purpose in being on this earth? And for a lot of veterans, if all you've ever been is a supply clerk, guess what kind of job they're going to push you toward when you come out of the military? If all you've ever been is an officer who is a commanding officer, which is basically an administrative role, that doesn't mean you don't have a great mind for logistics or a great mind for entrepreneurialism. And so a lot of people get pigeonholed into what you've already done or what you've been doing rather than the who that you were made to be. So when I told this lady I like to write and I like to speak, she said, well, have you ever written anything? And I pulled out my, remember the old hard shell leather bound briefcase, and I flipped the lid up and I grabbed a stack of probably 400 pieces that I'd written, and I put it on the desk. And she looked at me and she's like, what is that? I said, well, you ask if I'd written anything. She goes, oh, well, that's cute. Is there anything any particular in there? And I'm like, I think all of it's good. And she said, well, I'm sure you do. So I literally randomly stuck my fingers in the middle of the stack. I pulled out a page and I handed her the page. I had no idea what it was. I didn't review it first to make sure it was one of the best. I literally randomly handed her a sheet of paper. She read the paper and she got up and walked out of the room. It seemed like forever to me, but it's probably 10 minutes. She comes back in and all of her makeup's gone. And I'm like, you okay? She said, where did you get that? I said, I wrote it. She said, I understand that you may have typed it up, but I mean, the ideas that are in what you've written there, where do you get those ideas? Is that some of this James Dobson guy stuff? Is that the way he thinks? I'm like, no, I don't think he would approve of that. She's like, okay, so where did you get it? I said, it's me. It's original. It comes straight from my heart, from my thoughts, through my fingers and onto the paper. And she leaned back in her chair and she looked at me for a minute. And she said, so what do you want to do with that? And so you're the education counselor. I'm here to ask, how should I spend my GI Bill? Do I need a degree in journalism? Should I go to school for psychology? What should I do? Is it English? What do I need to do? She shook her head and she looked at me and she said, look, as far as English is concerned, how old are you? And I said, well, I'm 22. She said, yeah, you've got a better command of the English language at 22 than most people I know who teach English. So I don't think that's an issue. I said, okay. What about journalism? She said, oh, no. Yeah. No, the world of journalism wouldn't accept you. I said, okay, well, what about psychology? She said, again, I think your bigger problem is not that you don't have great thoughts. I think the problem is people are going to look at you and they're going to say, there's no way you wrote that. She said, if I just found that piece of paper in a magazine article or something, I would look at that and think that's written by a woman who's had a very hard life or a man who's been a therapist or a counselor or a priest for 100 years. There's no way a 22-year-old man wrote that. I'm like, but I did. She said, okay, then you're just going to have to wait until you're old enough for your hair to turn gray or fall out before anybody's going to give you the credibility of what you've written there.
And that's the biggest thing. And, you know, I can relate to that. You know, when I got out, I didn't have any plans. It's like, you know, I got out. I knew I wanted to have my own business. I knew what the business was going to be, but I didn't know what it was going to be, if that makes any sense. It was about helping people, but in what way was I going to help people? I had no clue. And so when I see a lot of veterans, and I talk to some veterans through social media and things of that nature, and we seem to have the same concerns because we, you know, we come from, some of us come from broken homes, single parent homes. And I was watching one of your videos, and, you know, that's how I'm familiar with that. I said, you know, we just have something in common because I come from a single parent home. And so you go in at a young age, you don't know who the hell you are, right? And so the military gives you responsibility, so you grow into this important person. You just create your own avatar, if you will. And then when you get out, you know, civilians say, oh, just a veteran. And they say, okay, well, you go over there.
Right.
And they have no clue as to what they have in their possession to help their business or help their organization. And just dealing with a lot of civilians telling me what I know, what I don't know. And then people talking to me or think that they should yell at me because I served in the military. And they say, well, you should be used to that. No, I'm used to people talking to me like a person.
Right.
And just that stereotype and that stigma because they watch movies. And the movies don't even represent the military on any level. You know, and they might get their uniforms right, partially right. But they just put those stereotypes in there. And so just seeing people being pigeonholed because they served in a particular field of study. I worked as an electrician. And one of the things, you know, I wasn't a great troubleshooter. And one of the biggest things is, like, you know, I liked people, working with people and helping them. And that was one of my strengths, is just, you know, finding that, how do I get the people to do the work? And I learned at a young age, 23 years old, how not to treat people. Because if you're going to be a leader, you're going to be in that position, your people are your best assets. And if you're not going to take care of them or going to take the time to develop them, they're going to show you how intelligent you really are. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, I'm grateful for the experience that I had in the military. And in the Navy, we had to take tests to be advanced. And so you're always studying, always working on things. And if you're not studying, you're never going to pass the tests. But when you learn how to study and learn how to take tests, you just learn so many different things that you wouldn't have learned in the civilian world.
Right. Well, and unfortunately, what you learn for the most part is how to memorize data, regurgitate that data, and how to study for a test, which, unfortunately, there are a whole lot of people who have degrees in electronics that couldn't change a resistor to save their life without burning up the board. There are a whole lot of people who have education in a field and no clue what they're doing. My wife and I, for a season, were pre-marriage counselors at a local church. We would talk with couples before they got married and kind of help them sort through relationship issues, perhaps that they had not even discussed. At the time, we'd been married almost 13 years. We'd seen some stuff. I feel like the insurance guy, you know, we know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two. And we had been through all of that. I was the only son of a single mom. I didn't know how to relate to her. I didn't have a dad to tell me what it meant to be a dad. I also was molested at 9 and then a porn addict for 25 years. I was the worst husband you could have expected. But we had figured out some things in those first 13 years of marriage. And we were replaced by two kids straight out of college, 22 years old, with a degree in marriage and family therapy, had never been married, and none of them were even in a relationship at the time. And I'm like, what kind of advice are you going to give these people, for heaven's sake? Half of them are older than you and have been in the relationship they're ready to get married in longer than you've been out of school. It's mind-boggling to me what people call competence or qualification. I think that sense of hopelessness, and I shared a meme that I saw on Facebook with you when we talked the other day, but I think it's very relevant to what you just said. The guy, Walmart greeter, shows up late to work, and when he walks in the door, his boss looks at him and goes, "This is the third day this week you've been late. Why can't you show up on time? Have you always been late to your job? What was it like when you were on your job in the military? I mean, surely they didn't just let you get away with that. I mean, what would somebody say to you if you walked in 15 minutes late to work?" And he said, "Well, normally they would say, 'Good morning, General. Can I get your coffee?'" There's a reality to that level of accomplishment that the moniker veteran dismisses. I mean, as veterans, we look at that and go, "Oh, he's a lieutenant colonel. What does that tell me?" Well, longevity, leadership, authority, power. He's a man under authority. He knows how to use authority. That's very insightful. But if you just label a veteran, he could have been the guy with 2 years and got outed under a Section 8, or he could be the guy with a dishonorable discharge because he wouldn't submit to authority while he was on active duty. Both of those guys are veterans. Colonel Allen West is a veteran. So is the punk that got in a fistfight 7 days a week while he was in Korea because he couldn't stay off the alcohol. Also a veteran. Not the same person.
And that goes back to that stereotype. You know, they just put a label and stuff like that. And some things I experience is that run into civilians who say, "Well, I don't like veterans. I don't really don't care. I didn't go into the military for you." My grandfather taught me at a young age that it's an honorable thing to do, you know, that we serve our country, whether you go in the military or serve in some type of government. And he's a World War II vet, he passed away back in 2010, but he was kind of the one who inspired me to go in the military, and just hearing some of his stories, and just being fortunate enough to hear that and hear those stories and the things that he had to endure. And of course, when he was in there, he was in the segregated unit because being Mexican. And so they weren't allowed to serve with whites. So just that experience there in itself, and then just seeing that aspect of life. And we're going to come back and share that, you know, some more about your story, and we're going to take a quick break.
Every business needs a dependable junk hauling service to keep their property clutter-free. Call 630-470-8307. Junk Luggers offers a wide range of eco-friendly residential and commercial junk removal services to help your business run smoothly and efficiently. Book your no-obligation estimate with Junk Luggers today. Banks and credit unions have unique junk, and Junk Luggers knows the business. Professional organizers, senior living communities, we're helping everyone clean up and start new. If you're redecorating, remodeling, or getting ready for new tenants, Junk Luggers will donate, recycle, and do our best to keep it out of the landfill. Call 630-470-8307. That's 630-470-8307 today. What is the role of American government anyway? Is the role of government to decide where I can go and where I can't? Is the role of government to work tirelessly to destroy vital infrastructure that keeps goods and services from my customers? Is the role of government to choose who can drive, fly, or ride according to mandated stipulations that threaten my body, health, mind, and conscience? Without medical freedom legislation in place, our rights and freedoms are one vote away from being dissolved. Individually, change is improbable, but as an aggregate, attainable. It's time to act with one voice. My voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
To protect our freedom, creating one voice that cannot be ignored. This requires your voice too. Your voice, your feet, your vote, not just at the ballot box, but training to be a poll watcher, precinct chair, judge, or early ballot counter, so you're doing all you can to protect the fairly counted American vote. Move Freely, America. Go to movefreelyamerica.org to find a chapter near you. Plug in, donate, and help our legislators defend our God-given rights under the Constitution. Move Freely, America. Because my voice
and my voice,
together with your voice, we're one voice that cannot be ignored. Donate today. MoveFreelyAmerica.org.
All right, welcome back. You know, it's sharing about the veterans, what they deal with in their experiences. I share about my grandfather, a World War II vet. And one of the things that seeing the older vets, being a member of the VFW, and a lot of them are alcoholics. They see things outside in the military and going to war and things of that nature that they can't share with anybody. And you're talking about that hopelessness. And I think that's the biggest thing, too, is this not being able to relate to your civilian counterparts, the things which you experience, the things which you see. And so I can speak to this because I put myself in a shell, you know, I got married after I got out of the military, and trying to share things with my wife, and she wasn't really interested. And when I'd share a story with her, then she would go off something else. And then my family members as well, I really couldn't share anything with them because my siblings never served. And so I see the veterans just have to become a shell, and they don't know who to talk to. And you talk about the hopelessness. I think that's a lot of that, too, just not knowing where to turn and who to reach out to. What are your experiences with that?
I was watching a television show, literally just before I came over here. It's called Peaky Blinders. It's set in England right after the First World War. And one of the guys who's a main character in that show is a war veteran, decorated war veteran, lots of awards for things that he did in the field of combat. And he and his brothers run a business, and they're interviewing some guys. And this young kid comes in. He's got a fake gun on his hip, and his mommy made him his gun belt. And he's like, you are some kind of dime store cowboy, but you are not a warrior. And so after a little bit of conversation, he walks out, and this guy's older brother goes, kids these days, oh, my gosh. And I'm thinking, that was 1920-something. I mean, it's 2020 now. You ought to see the kids these days. And then the brother said something I thought was profound. He said, they've never seen the war, and they're still kids. And I thought, how many of our veterans today dismiss the young people they could be leading and influencing because they haven't seen what we've seen? They haven't been where we've been. And so there's some kind of assumption that they're naive. Maybe they're unintelligent or undereducated, or maybe they're overeducated and unexperienced. But the reality is they still have a lot to offer. They just need a mentor. My uncle was a hard man, a racist man, a deep country boy kind of a guy, tough guy. I watched him catch a 350 engine that fell from the tree because the limb broke. He caught it in his arms and put it on the back of the truck. And when he put it on the back of the truck, it bent the tailgate in half like a taco. And I just stood there at 10 years old in absolute amazement. One of the wisest things he ever said to me, though, was, a smart man learns from his own mistakes. A wise man learns from everybody else's. When it comes to purpose in life, I think some of the greatest purpose a veteran can ever have is to be a mentor to someone who shouldn't have to walk in his shoes to learn what he's learned. You know, my favorite quote of mentorship is, if you want to go somewhere, find someone who's been there before you and ask them. Most people don't want to experience war. We spent 20 years in Afghanistan. Why? But most people don't want to live that life. They don't want to be hunted down by bullets or terrorists. They want to live a peaceful life. Well, you don't get to do that without somebody being willing to step in front of a bullet for you. But it doesn't mean that the only way you can learn those lessons. There's a great video I watched the other day of all the aircraft that came back from World War II. And when they would come back from dogfights, they would red mark all of the bullet holes. And they're like, we need to reinforce the planes. Look where all the bullet holes are. And somebody wisely stepped up and said, you knucklehead, those planes survived. Who cares if they got shot there? Find the planes that didn't survive. Find the places where if they got shot there, they didn't come back, and reinforce those. That's what veterans should be doing as mentors. That's the sense of hope and purpose that many of them avoid because they do go into a shell. They do hide. They don't want to give their wisdom or their knowledge. And I realize some of that's protected by secrecy orders and some things you just can't talk about. But some of the hardest lessons I learned in life, I learned while I was on active duty. And some of the most valuable lessons I've taught my sons as they're growing up are lessons that I learned while I was on active duty. And they haven't had to serve to learn them because I was willing to share them.
And I can agree with that. There was a command master chief that I served with prior to my separation, and black guy, and he was telling me what it was like being in the military in the 70s. And he told me, he says, you know, you showed up to work ready to fight because you're going to have to fight whether you wanted to or not. And I think a lot of people have never, ever heard that. And when he told me that, I was like, I never knew that about the military. And 1952, Harry Truman desegregated the military. And, you know, the military is often the test pilot for everything that we deal with. Desegregation, you know, integrating. And if you were the minority, that they say, you weren't allowed to be in the technical field or the communications. You had to be shining shoes, working the laundry, working the galley. Things like that. You just couldn't be in the technical fields because they didn't view you as being intelligent. And that's just a lot of things that people don't realize and they never really pay attention to.
Right.
And not too many people will ever share that. And so just being that, having that connection and that mentorship, I like learning from other people's mistakes because I hate looking foolish. So that's kind of why I do that. And I've tried to help other people, and they just sit there and say, yeah, I know. It's like, okay, well, you don't want to hear anything. So I let them fall on their face, and, you know, that's the only way they're going to learn. And, you know, on the touch on the point on suicide, I really think that, you know, veterans need to know that they should open up to people, not because I say so or anybody else says so, but because they are important. And that's the biggest thing that they need to understand, that they're important, they're a valuable part of society, and they just have so much to offer.
Suicide is by no means my specialty, but I can tell you the first person I talked out of suicide, I was 14, she was 19, and she was holding a loaded 357. I walked out of the room with the gun. I can tell you, though, that in all of the leadership training that I've done, Dale Carnegie, John Maxwell, all the people that I've studied, Dr. Caroline Leaf, Bruce Lipton, Dr. Daniel Amen, all of them, the story you tell to yourself when you look in the mirror, that's the driving force in your life. It's not your job. It's not your education. It's not your friends. It's the story you're telling. When my wife and I were going through the discovery of what our life could be together at about the 10-year mark, there was a season up to that point that I had so much regret and so much self-loathing. I had sabotaged every relationship I had up to that point. I was thoroughly convinced that I wasn't worth having around. And the day she turned to me at Pine Cove Summer Camp and she said, "We need to talk." Man, the gears in my head were going through everything. I thought of all the useless things I'd done, all the hateful things I'd done. I looked at myself as fat and lovable. And I couldn't believe that this woman had hung around as long as she had, but I was thoroughly convinced that "we need to talk" meant she's done, she's out, she's found something better. And I spent the entire day so sick I was ready to throw up. We sat down face to face. She took my hand, she looked me in the eye, and she said, "When you ask me to believe that you're fat and unlovable, you're asking me to believe a lie. I know that God sent you as a gift to me. I love you no matter what. I've forgiven everything that you've done, and now I need you to see you the way I do." Those words saved our marriage, but they also saved my life, because if her words had instead been, "I'm done, I'm moving on," that separation would have been as hard as leaving the military and starting over again. I don't know that I could have. I don't know that I would have. And so battling with that self-worth is as important as battling with hope. If I can find a purpose, if I can help somebody else's life be better, then I have a reason to live. But if I look at me and I still hate me, if I look at me and I can't forgive me for what I've done, then the person that I'm looking at isn't worth living. And that's a whole different ballgame. And that's when it's time to get a coach.
True. And that's one of the things that I like to talk about and share with people. It's like, you know, to love yourself. And, you know, we get beat up. You know, people are always telling you what you know, what you don't know. They may joke at you because maybe you're not doing good in school or whatever the case may be. And that's just something we're programmed with, you know, to criticize ourselves, judge ourselves. You get an F on a report card, or, well, you're not good at math. You don't understand math. And I was thinking about that one day. It's like, because I had a love-hate relationship with math. And I had those instructors who sat there and said, "I can teach you." And I had the best, I got A's with those teachers. And you had those teachers say, "Well, you should know that." And they won't explain anything to you, and that's where you struggle. And it isn't that the person's ignorant or they're untrainable. It's that they just haven't had the right person to sit there and tell them that "I can teach you that, and it'll be easy." And I think that's really important for veterans to understand that. And getting ready here to wrap it up, I want to thank you for the show, being here. What's the best way for people to contact you?
They're welcome to just go to my website. It is my name, JLORENNORRIS.com.
Great. Sounds great. With that, we'll wrap it up. The idea behind this podcast is to help people get a better perspective of themselves. I take underachievers and create performers, meeting you where you're at and taking the journey to success with you. You're not alone. You're not less than anyone else. And you can do anything you put your mind to. But you might appreciate a little guidance or a nudge in the right direction. Check out my links in the description box, because I have so much for you that you don't want to miss. My name is Michael Chavez, and this is what it looks like on the other side of the bed.
You've been listening to the Michael Chavez Podcast, The Other Side of the Bed, on the OPBM Network Podcasts. To be a guest or sponsor of the Michael Chavez Podcast, call 682-365-2078. Discover all the ways you can work with Michael in the description box below. Reproduction of the Michael Chavez Podcast without permission is expressly prohibited, but you can freely share this content far and wide. For OBBM Network program information, call 214-714-0495.